Triple M Footy lives on Listener, thanks to McDonald's and Ream Hot Water. Triple M rocks the NRL. Breaking news, the big opinions, last minute goss from inside the locker room. If it's NRL news you need, get it right here. For King G, you wear the crown. This is Triple M's Saturday Scrum.
My name is Tony Squires, joined by Ryan Girdler, Wade Graham and Michael Chemis. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hey, Tony.
Tony, good to be back.
Hello, yes, everyone. Good to be back, Wade. Well, let's begin there before we get into all the huge matters.
Did you miss me? Or
I did miss you.
Really, it's only been a short term in our relationship on air as a Saturday scrum, so it's nice to feel.
Yeah, no, I fall deeply quickly, so that's okay. It's all good. Where were you? I understand you were in Adelaide.
Yeah, I went down to the Live golf event down there at the Grange. What an experience it was. I was lucky enough to go down on the Thursday night, played Kyonga on the Friday, which is a great golf course for anyone who is a golfer. Mm-hmm. Went to the Live event on Saturday and Sunday, and then I finished off playing Royal Adelaide on the Monday, and it was an awesome experience. And just I've seen it on the TV, but I never quite realized how much the team event overtook the singles event. And of course, it was the Australian team. So it was a shout out Matty Jones, Herbert, Smith and Leishman for the Rippers. They got it done. And poor Steele, he was the individual winner, but he sort of got overshadowed because
consult your notes and see who actually won the individual.
Well, I felt a little bit bad for him because he got overshadowed by the team event, but it was such good fun, the little playoff at the end then, and all the Aussie fans were...
Tell me, Wader, did you find yourself at any stage at the watering hole?
I did. Mm-hmm. And that's where I was on the Saturday. So okay. It was between 11 and 12, and the players, so they finish 11, then they go through the tunnel and enter the par 3 on the 12th, and Fisher was there. His shoe got passed around about 1,000 times for shoes. I couldn't quite believe a golf tournament would turn into a festival, but it did. And
did anybody hold a quiet please sign up at any stage?
Never. No. None of that.
What about Wade? He starts off by saying, I'm new to the show. Then he goes on to talk about what he did 8 weeks into the new regime here. How'd you get the weekend off, mate? If this was a football team, we'd be worried about your commitment.
Well, this is why I gave footy away. There was just so much more opportunities on the other side. So I've been enjoying my retirement. Hopefully a few more events to come. Actually, I've got the Mick Fenning Day in a few months.
Oh, you're off for that as well?
Yeah, up at Byron, so that'll be fun. You need to talk to Charlie, mate. He's the boss.
Wow. And you weren't responsible for throwing the water bottle that hit Lucas Herbert's caddy in the back of the head, were you?
No, I didn't drink much water over the weekend. My cup was filled with some other stuff.
You've got to hydrate, kids. You must hydrate. Michael Chambers, what's going on? There's so much we're going to talk about, a lot of injury stuff. And we can get to the big news of Adam Reynolds very shortly. But in terms of charges, first off, anything to report from what's happened so far?
Yeah, there were a few charges last night, none that have resulted in any suspensions. Dean Mariner for that shoulder charge on James Tedesco was hit with a grade 1 shoulder charge. Emre Guler, Nathan Brown, Morgan Smithies, they were all charged from last night's games, but they will all get off with a fine and be free to play next week. So nothing to really worry about from the judiciary report. The big news, though, Tone, is Cameron Murray. It's quite significant, the injury to Cameron Murray.
All right, so it's a hip pointer?
Yeah, hip flexor injury. He's facing up to 8 weeks out of the game. He had scans last night. Souths have confirmed 6 to 8 weeks on the sidelines. He'll miss, you'd imagine, the first two games of the Origin Series for New South Wales. That's a huge blow for the Blues. Right. 3 weeks away from Michael Maguire naming his team for game one and their inspirational forward. I know he hasn't been, that team hasn't been in good form, but you'd imagine he would have been one of the first players picked, right, Cameron Murray. That fair to say, Wado?
Well, I would imagine if, because there's going to be a conversation around Dylan Edwards and James Tedesco, I would have imagined if they weren't to go with Tedesco, he would have been close to being named captain as well, because you look through that team without a Tedesco possibly in it, there isn't really any leading candidates for
Isaiah Yeo, Nathan.
But I think Cam would have been right in that conversation as well, definitely. Just because of the character he is. He's the guy at the forefront of my mind when I think about possible replacements for the captaincy. Still think Teddy will be there, but yeah, it's a question mark that we're not going to know the answer to now.
And his versatility at that level too, Wado. Like, we saw him on the weekend. He just moves out into the centres. He would have probably played on one edge with you'd imagine Martin on the other. And I know Angus Crichton's doing really well and he's in great touch. But, you know, the versatility with Cam there, you know, playing on an edge and then being able to shift if you've got an outside back injury. And, you know, it's a big, big blow for New South Wales.
And massive. For Souths. Like, they have,
and for Souths,
they've got
course.
No players left. They're decimated through injuries, suspension. They get Latrell back this week. But they are in all sorts, South Sydney. That performance on the weekend compounded by injuries to, as we said, Murray, but also Jai Gray potentially out for 2 to 3 months. Dean Hawkins, another one out for 2 to 3 months. So they will struggle to field a team this week, South Sydney.
Let's turn our attention to the Roosters and the Broncos. The Roosters might have racked up 100 points over the past 2 weeks, 40 to 18 over the Bronx, and it wasn't just the scoreline. That's devastating for Brisbane, is the loss of Adam Reynolds with that ruptured bicep. Arthur's also with a broken jaw, Chamo,
yeah, Jesse Arthur's will go into surgery this afternoon. He's looking, I think, in about 8 weeks at the moment. Jesse Arthur's, they're hoping to have him back at that point. Corey Oates, you imagine he would come in and replace him. But the big news, Adam Reynolds, he'll have surgery this week, ruptured bicep. He will miss probably 3 months. They hope to have him back doing contact work in about 10 weeks. Give him a couple to get right, 12 weeks. So just in time for their run home to the finals for Adam Reynolds. That's a big blow.
You've seen a few ruptured biceps in your time?
Yeah, and if it's a clean rupture, like there's a chance to rehab it. And they don't look great when you have it because it looks like half your biceps missing because it rolls up. But yeah, it depends. Every injury is different. There is a chance to rehab, but if they've elected for surgery, which is probably the right move because 12 weeks, 3 months, it sounds like a lot. But they have Jock Madden waiting in the wings. They probably have an experienced and confident enough team now. It's not necessarily about whether they fade out because I think they definitely can still make the finals. It just depends in what shape they can and how good they're sitting because if Adam's to miss most of the season, he's going to come back in the probably really good shape in the back end of the year. And if they're going anywhere halfway decent, we know how much he's going to add to that team. And it could be the spark they need heading into September. So the young boys up there who are not so young anymore, who have got enough experience and know-how, they need to really cover this loss and just keep the wins ticking over, keep the season ticking over because they know they have a little ace up their sleeve who's going to come back into the team if they're good enough to be in good position come the back end of the season.
I think the last couple of weeks in the form of Jock Madden would allow everyone just to breathe easy in Brisbane at the moment. He's been pretty impressive. He filled in at 6, I think, against the Tigers and was good until he got injured. And we saw him fill in for Reno a couple of weeks ago and also performed quite well. So he seems to be developing into a really good half. And I'm with Wado. Like, if you want Reno to play 12 or 14 games a year, when do you want him to play it? And that's in September, that's in August, and that's when he's going to be available again. So, yeah, they've certainly got the depth of squad. They've got to go. They're probably going to have 4 guys in Origin, I would imagine. So they're going to go through that. But their resources are going to be tested. But if they get Adam Reynolds back in round 24 or 23 and he gets 2 or 3 games under his belt before the finals and they're still up around the top 4, they'll be in good shape.
Yeah, I mean, the idea of having him fresh and ready to go in August is great, but you'd rather manage him rather than pop his bicep, I think, his way on the way through.
Let's be honest, his knee's not 100%. He's been carrying that for a while.
Correct, yeah.
And the way Gerz just put it is better than any way to put it. If you want him to play 12 or 14 games a year and that's all you need him to play, when do you want him on the field? Get him on the back end of the field in August and September when it really counts and when you want to win the competition. So, and they've got enough with Jock and the depth and the experience in their squad. Now, like Origin will test them, obviously, with missing some guys, but they're still in decent shape. If they get there, they're still in decent shape.
So let me ask you this then. The narrative around Adam Reynolds when he left South Sydney, and Blake Solly, the CEO, made the point this week that everyone just assumes that he walked, that they let him go, they didn't want him. They did offer him a 1-year deal. Their concern was that his body, by year 3, which is what he wanted, would start to shut down from what they've seen over the course of his career. So they offer him the 1 year, reluctance, maybe go 2, but he wants 3. He takes the 3. He's in his 3rd year right now at the Broncos. And we've seen, as you said, he's had a knee injury. He's had a few issues with his legs. And now he has this bicep injury. Can you understand South Sydney's reluctance then to go and not give him the 3 years? They were relying on him, his understanding, because he's been there so long. And I imagine Adam Reynolds was relying on their loyalty because he'd been such a good servant for so long. Did they get it wrong? Did they get it horribly wrong, South Sydney?
Horribly
seeing
wrong.
What we saw
horribly
seeing
wrong.
Now.
Horribly yeah. wrong. Because, of course, they needed to manage a situation where they had a young Lachlan Ilias in their system, and they would have had to manage a situation with Adam to try and maybe finesse it a bit more on the third year, like give him the second year for sure.
Which I think they were talking about. They were willing to maybe go 2 years.
And then if you manage to keep him on your books and you have a young Lachlan Ilias as his apprentice, and you, even if you back your performance staff saying, oh, we have doubts about Adam playing 26 games a year, well, there's a ready-made seven ready to come in and develop under Adam, learn his trade, how to manage the game, how to not just deal with the footy, deal with the stuff off the field, because that's the hardest part.
Yeah.
The footy actually becomes the easiest part the older you get because you know how to manage the off-field stuff. Now you fast forward 3 years, Adam, sure, he's breaking down, but we're just talking about how good Jock Madden's going and deputising under him,
that
being able to come in. That should have been Ilias.
And now
South have none.
And also, Wade, you look at Mam and the way that he took over last night, and you can just tell the influence that in game management Adam Reynolds is having on him, you know, knowing what he needs to do when he hasn't got Madden and when he hasn't got Reynolds on there. Like, he made a real difference in that element of the contest last night. Mam, he obviously didn't get the job done. But you can just see how he's developed in that role as well. And I'm sure that's on the back of conversations and time spent with Reno.
Yeah. And look, and the concern about older bodies, I guess, can be justified, but young bodies get broken as well. Lachlan Ilias running around New South Wales Cup breaks his leg.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's all sliding doors.
And keeping older guys around the club, it's not necessarily always about their input on the field as well. It's their input within the group, input around the young guys, giving them a cuddle when they need a cuddle, or giving them a bit of a hard word when they need a hard word. If you look at the teams who don't have a real quality group of senior players, I'm not talking about representative players. I'm talking about senior players who have been around the game 12, 13, 14, 15 years. That's when you get the inconsistencies in their form.
Well, that's what the Roosters wanted Luke Keary to play one more year, to continue help Sam Walker develop into that halfback role. And he's had some really good games, Sam Walker, this year. Obviously, there were some inconsistencies last year. But now that he's decided to pull the pin, they're left in a situation now, the Roosters, where they don't have that in their halves anymore. And they're going to have to go with Sam Walker and Sandon Smith unless they can find some other senior voice. So you're right. The value of having that senior figure in your halves is huge. And you see that with like Cherry Evans, Sean Johnson. These guys are adding so much value both on and off the field.
All right, well, let's have a listen to Brisbane coach Kevvy Walters talking not just about Adam Reynolds' injury, but the performance last night itself.
Yeah, not looking too good for him. He's got the bicep injury, torn bicep, so...
Is it season-ending potentially, or you're not sure?
Potentially. Yeah. We're very fortunate at our club. We've got great depth in all positions. And Jesse Arthurs has broken his jaw as well, so two long-term injuries for us. But I'm more concerned with how we played tonight than anything else, so we can fix that. We just kicked the ball away, silly little kicks, and, you know, you can't build pressure when you do that. And, you know, there's other parts of our game too that I haven't been happy with in the last 3 or 4 weeks, which got exposed tonight. So, yeah, we've got plenty to work on, that's for sure. But the good thing is, round nine, so...
With Adam out and Jock still a maybe, is this really now the time for Ezra to take on an even greater ownership?
Oh, no, I think the ownership needs to be spread across, you know, the group, with Paddy there, with Reese, with Ezra, and with Billy and Tyson. They all need to, you know, step up in that space when Renault's not there.
There was a little bit of ball wasting from the Broncos. And Reece Walsh, who we all think and know is absolutely brilliant and had his great moments last night, he and Ezra Mam got them back to 18 all after Adam Reynolds was gone from the field. But in the first half particularly, a lot of those little kicks before, you know, they just kind of get, rather than just powering downfield, just trying some little things that didn't work, Gerds.
Yeah, well, they were just impatient, as Kevvy said, and that works. They've had a couple of kind of cheap wins against the Tigers and the Raiders and the Dolphins of late, where, you know, they fell into that trap of, well, we'll outscore you. And if you look at the sides that they've struggled against this year, they got beat twice now by the Roosters, they got beat by Melbourne, they got beat by the Panthers. And they're the sides that you need to build your game to beat. You need to go out there with a different mentality. And sometimes it's okay when you've got so much natural ability just to go out there and blow some of the sort of less consistent sides off the field. And that's what they can do. And they can do that in 15, they can do that in 10-minute windows when they want to. There's no other side in the comp that can attack like the Broncos in those certain periods of the game. But if you want to go out and you want to be a contender and you want to match the better sides in the competition, you need to play for 60, 70 and sometimes 80 minutes and be happy with the result. Sometimes it's a little bit boring, especially when you've got Ferraris out there in the garage and you just want to, you know, grab the keys and go for a run. But that's going to be the hard thing, you know. It's going to be the messaging from Kevy about his team over the next couple of weeks is just, you know, knowing what style of game they need to play and who they're playing against and respecting their opponents. They didn't respect the Roosters last night and the Roosters hurt them.
They did indeed. They've hurt a couple of teams recently after looking a bit dodgy themselves earlier in the season. You like the look of the turnaround?
Yeah, I think so. And there's some players who have been down on form over the last couple of years or out of luck, really, who have really helped turn this around. I think Connor Watson's been outstanding. Angus Crichton,
yeah,
he's been enormous and he probably gets himself back into the Origin conversation. Brandon Smith, he wasn't at his best last year. He's been better for him this year. So I know they've got the big names who we always say are important to them, but it's the other guys who haven't had good seasons that are really lifting for the Roosters at the moment.
Yeah, they're starting to warm the Roosters, you can tell. At Anzac Day clash, I thought it was going to be a lot closer just because of the occasion, but adding Sammy Walker, I think they miss Sammy Walker a lot because the Roosters' style is very unique, the way they play. They play that fast tempo with Manu carrying a lot, Teddy playing a lot. But Walker, he's a point of difference. I don't even think he knows what he's doing half the time when he's out on the field, but that's what makes him so dangerous, his unpredictability. And just adding that back in, that different point of attack, everyone else goes about their business. It allows the Roosters to become really dangerous. And they did well last night. They got to an early lead. Brisbane responded. And then when the game was in the balance, as Gerd said, and Kevy said, the Broncos made a couple of poor decisions at the end of set, and that was enough for the Roosters to get back on top, get the momentum and go on with it. So they're starting to warm to the task.
In the past, Tony, I think, and I spoke about the Roosters and their attack last week, how, you know, it's very different when Victor comes back in and they play him sort of first receiver and everyone plays off him. And I'm not sure that suits Sam Walker. Well, it doesn't because we've seen how Sam can play the last couple of weeks. But I think what's happened now is, you know, the Roosters on the back of momentum, they've always seen like this bit of a scrap. Who gets the football? Does Teddy get it? Does Keary come in and get it? Does Smith run from dummy half? How do we get the ball to Joey Manu? And there's all this confusion on the back of momentum. And I think now what it looks like to me is that on the back of momentum, Sam gets the ball. And that's just allowed everyone just to relax because everyone gets excited on a half breaker or momentum when you're dominating the middle third of the field. Everyone wants the football because they're seeing opportunity. And I think in the past it's been confusing to understand, especially for the dummy half of the Roosters, who should get the ball and when and who's pulling the trigger. And put you generally, you know, if you're the dummy half, you're going to give it to the guy that's is converting opportunities. And I think that's really been changed over the last, you know, few years. But if you look at all the other sides that have a lot of success, they always go to the same person on the back of momentum. You know, when there's an opportunity, there's one person that's going to get the football and he's going to convert that for him. And I think now they've found that in Sam. And I think it's just allowed a lot of those other guys just to relax and play off the back of what he does.
Well, the talk's been around South Sydney for weeks now, and Coach Jason Demetriou, would he survive? Well, he didn't. Sacked 48 hours before the game against Penrith this week. Michael Chamis, how did it all go down?
It was a big day on Tuesday. I arrived there about 8:30 in the morning on Tuesday. The board meeting had just started. I didn't leave till 10 p.m. that night. Like there was a lot to unfold from that first board meeting. That was everyone. Everyone thought that when the board members walked out, we'd get an announcement soon after that Jason Demetriou was gone. We all sat around waiting. I actually rang Jason and he answered. And I said, have you still got a job? He said, as far as I'm concerned, yes. And he was waiting around. He decided to leave training and head home. He walked out the front door, unaware if he was going to return or not. And then the board decided to call a second board meeting later that night. So what had happened was Russell Crowe was determined to give Jason Demetriou more time. And he was trying to convince his directors, his representatives on the board, to push for that. And that's why there was a stalemate at that point and they decided to come back at the end of later in the afternoon because they weren't budging on a willingness to give Jason more time, to the point where Russell actually spoke to Jason Demetri and said, mate, I've got your back. I have the ability to call the shots at this club. Don't worry.
Mm.
It highlights the how his power has diminished at the club since selling a part of his shares in the business. And then we get to a point at 7:30 at night where Jason Demetrio has been told by the club, Blake Sawley called him and said, it's over, effective immediately. It was really harsh the way it all happened for him to be waiting around. I think South Sydney gave him ample time, though. I don't think South Sydney can be accused of not giving him the time he needed to turn it around, because the things that they felt should have been fixed, it should have been fixed over the off-season, and to the point where they felt they were getting worse. It wasn't like last year they were showing signs of improvement. The board felt as though they were deteriorating rapidly. And the most interesting part I found is, though, they let Jason Demetrio instill a player-led culture, right? He instilled a lot of power in those guys, a lot of responsibility. And because he did so, they didn't think he had the ability and to turn it around and take that away from him. Because if you do that and you give the players all the voice and a lot of control, to take it away, it's coaching suicide, right? They felt the person who had to do that had to be somebody fresh, and they decided to part ways with Jason Demetrio.
Funny, isn't it, the way sports and rugby league journalism works? Because in the lead-up, it was all, look, he's got to go. This isn't working, Jason Demetrio. Sadly, but you have to go. He goes, and then Blake Solly turns up and says, how could you sack him? It's so cruel the way you did that. You know, the guy deserved another chance. The story changes every moment. What about the leaking? There's often been talk about that from way back at South Sydney. The email he sent to the players?
Yeah, the message he sent, yeah. Look, I know that the players were a bit concerned about that within 5 minutes of Jason Demetrio informing his players that he was moved on effective immediately. The text message ended up in the Sydney Morning Herald. Now, it was a story. I had my name on the story, but I hadn't received the text message. It was actually Adrian Prajenko who got that part of the story, and the players were disappointed that that had gotten out so quickly, among other things that we'd reported in the last few weeks about things that were seeping out of team meetings. So
talk about leaks. Like, I was on 360
mm-hmm.
when Buzz broke the story
mm.
and he actually stated, I got a text message from someone in the board meeting saying that JD was terminated effective immediately. Like, it doesn't get so any more
under the desk while he's at the board meeting.
It doesn't even get any more leaky than that. Like, this is the highest level of the club, board members, sensitive information being spoken about, like direction of the club, direction of the coach, and someone in that board meeting messages Buzz.
The board meeting was over, though. The board meeting was over.
That's not how Buzz stated.
I don't know how Buzz stated, but the board meeting was over, because by that time we had our story up. Jason Demetrio had been informed and the players were just about to be told. So the board meeting had ended.
Well, so you're going to have a stoush with Buzz now. I didn't see
what Buzz said. I was actually out there at Heffron Park all day for 12 hours, and the board meeting was over by that point. And that's why things started to seep out, because the coach had been told, the players were starting to get told, Ben Hornby would receive a phone call from Blake Solly that he was going to be the assistant coach. So things started to happen. I think it's unfair on South Sydney to suggest that someone was in there texting journos as they were making the decision to say he was gone.
Well, you're going to take that up with Buzz,
I'll ring Buzz right now.
That's how he broke the story.
Good news is that Ben Hornby, as interim coach, now whoever, when he was playing Dragons, the person who had the sign can break it back out, honk if you're Hornby. What did you make of it all, Ryan?
Oh, well, I thought it took probably a little bit longer than it needed to. I know there was a lot of T's that needed to be crossed and whatnot, but yeah, I thought it was just dragged out. And you just get that from clubs that you can just tell that, you know, like they always say, the success obviously starts at the top. And we've seen that with the Tigers over the last few years. We've seen that with different organisations. I mean, when they start sort of performing really badly, it seems to all be falling apart for them. So they obviously needed a change. I think it's the right move. I'm not sure who they get to come in to fix that. I get the feeling that it needs to be someone that's willing to kind of rebuild that organisation, someone that's really, you know, not just coming in to help them sort of try and win a premiership, because I don't believe they're in a window at the moment. I think there's a fair bit of work that needs to be done to their roster to get them to where they need to be to have, you know, someone come in and just take them to a premiership or a title. So, yeah, I feel like there's a lot of work that needs to be done at South Sydney, and I'm not sure who's on the market. I know that everyone's talking about Wayne. I'm not sure whether Wayne will take that position or whether or not it needs to be someone that's at a different stage of their career, willing to roll up the sleeves and get that organisation back on its feet.
I'll be stunned if it's not Wayne Gertz. I'll be stunned if it's not just about there already, to be honest with you. There's a three-year deal that's going to be tabled to him. It'll be Wayne Bennett. And if he's not, then maybe I'll just go with Wade and play golf on Saturdays.
I get the feeling that there's already someone in the wings as well. Like, you don't go over to England and sign a player like Lewis Dodd when a young man over in England isn't going to up and move his family to a club who's running on the bottom of the table, who's had an 18-month car crash of a period, if he doesn't know who the coach is going to be. You're not going to commit to a club like that if you don't have
at least an indication
an indication or an inkling who the coach is going to be. And the only one I can see who has that type of sway would be Ben. And I think
he's denied having anything to do with the, you know, enlisting Lewis Dodd. Wayne Bennett said
I don't think Bennett enlisted him. But what I do think is that Lewis Dodd was under the impression that if he came over, there's every chance he's going to be coached by Wayne Bennett. Wayne's an interesting one, because Gerds didn't mention Wayne in that point in regards to they don't need a coach who's going for premier success. They need to rebuild the club. And Wayne is so narrow-focused. His focus is going to be on winning a premiership. It's not about the pathways or developing a system that sets them up for success for 10 years. That's not Wayne Bennett. He's not coming in for that. So clearly, if he's coming, the club believes they're still in a premiership window. And to Gertz's point, I don't know if they are. They are falling apart very quickly. Some of the guys in the team are starting to age pretty quickly. Why are we even talking about it? Because it will be Wayne Bennett. He's coming back. He's going to be respected by the players. Yeah. They know that.
His relationship with Cody Walker, with Latrell Mitchell, worked for them last time.
Yeah.
I guess that's one of the things he brings.
Yeah.
Wade, pensive.
No, I'm just thinking. Well, I think Wayne's the right guy, right? Because I just mentioned that, well, everyone knows about the well-documented disharmony in the board and the football program, the club. Sort of Wayne comes in and sits above all that, and he would just say to the people in the club, don't worry, like, I'll contact you when we need your help. You just let me worry about the football. He's a power unto himself when he runs the footy program, and he has all the respect. And yes, they're in disarray at the moment. They're lacking confidence in their playing ability, but the talent doesn't go away. Like, Cam Murray's talent doesn't go away. Latrell's talent doesn't go away. Jack Whiten, Cody, all that talent doesn't go away. It just takes someone to bring it all together, because at the moment they look disjointed. They don't look like a footy team that's playing for each other, because teams that play for each other, they turn up in the hard moments. They turn up in the kick chase. On that 20 tap, someone finds a way. Well, not someone. At least half the team gets back, because you know your mate's depending on you to get back and make a tackle and cover the ball that went over. So they tried really hard. I feel bad having a crack at them from the other night, because they tried really hard. They did, and they threw everything they had into Penrith. They got to a 12-0 lead. Unfortunately for them, they just came up against Penrith, who they're relentless. They never stop. So when the energy had to run out eventually, and Penrith for the team to make you pay for that. But they did have a crack the other night, and, you know, they get Latrell back this week, and there is, you know, a glimmer of hope in the future that there is a resolution to all the innuendo around will he coach, will he not coach. But they need a big figure to come in, and I think it is Wayne.
Chamo, why would Wayne commit so early on? I mean, for mine, he holds all the cards, right? Like, he's obviously done a good job at the Dolphins there for a couple of seasons. Everyone knows that he wants to continue coaching. Everyone knows the game, and, you know, there's definitely one job that's available. There doesn't seem to be really anyone else on the market. And if there is anyway, I mean, Wayne pretty much would come over the top of most other applicants. And we all know that by the end of the year, there might be another two jobs maybe, or who knows what's going to happen in this game of ours. So why is it in Wayne's best interest to sign now this early and take himself out of the market?
Well, I think the club you're referring to is Parramatta, right? And I think that, I know that there have been third parties have gone to Parramatta and said, Wayne Bennett is interested in talking about joining Parramatta if there is a coaching availability. And Parramatta have made that abundantly clear. There is no coaching position to be discussed right now. There was a board meeting held on Wednesday night. They didn't want to pursue what had been relayed to them from third parties. They're backing the coach. They think they've had a horror run with injuries, and they think that he can turn it around. Wayne, though, I don't know, Gerd. Do you think Wayne is better suited to Parramatta, though, than the Rabbitohs?
Well, whether it's Parramatta or someone else, I mean, you know, who knows what's going to happen in the game? You know, someone goes on is at a club that, look at Newcastle, you know, not that he'd ever go back there, but I mean, a club can go on a five-game losing streak, then all of a sudden the coach is on the rack, and then who knows what's going to open up at the back end of the season. But in relation to your question, yeah, I do. I believe that, you know, Parramatta are definitely in a window at the moment. They have had some injuries. I think Brad Arthur's done a really good job and they've been a consistent side for a long time. But I feel like they need another voice or another influence to take them to that next level. We've seen their results against some of the quality sides in the NRL. They've got the best record against Penrith. They always seem to aim up in those games. But there's just something that holds them back from going to the level where I think all their players could achieve that sort of success and potentially win a title. And he might be the guy to get that out of them.
So if
maybe
you're sitting
the
on
board
the
at Parramatta don't want someone as influential as Wayne coming in.
So if you're sitting on the board, though,
take them out a little bit.
If you're sitting on the board, though, you're saying that they should react to the South Sydney Rabbitohs having a vacancy and on the verge of signing Wayne Bennett. They should fast-track what they're doing there.
No, I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying, hasn't Parramatta been in that phase anyway for the last 3 or 4 weeks based on their performance and especially after Darwin?
Yeah.
And I think that, yeah, sometimes depending on the situation, if you've got like Wayne Bennett sitting on the shelf who's about to get taken off and, you know, you're on the fence with where you're at with your coach, you don't want to wait till round 18 and then Wayne's gone and then there's no one left and you think, oh, gee, that would have been a good idea at the time. You need to be proactive if that's the way that, you know, they might go in the end.
I think Parramatta have looked at what Wayne has done in the past at different clubs and thought, we don't want to set this club back. Because you got to remember, this administration was brought in after a period where the Eels have had so much upheaval and they really couldn't get themselves right. As a club, they're a pretty good club right now. They run really well. Yep. They've had a lot of success without a premiership. If they go and sign Wayne, their fear is that they then neglect everything they've worked so hard to get right. Because, as I said earlier, Wayne's focus is so narrow on that premiership and winning a comp with the first grade team that everything else will fall by the wayside. I think Parramatta would prefer a coach who will actually come in and have a whole of club focus.
Yeah, sure. But I mean, what like their pathway? Are they doing really well with their pathways at the moment, are they?
No, they're not. I mean, think they've won.
Exactly. Like what part of their club, I mean, the commercial partnerships, that might be going well. The leagues clubs might be running well. But you ask the hundreds of thousands of Parramatta fans out there that haven't won a title since 86, what do they want to do?
They want Wayne.
Yeah, they want to win. They want to win a title.
For King G, you wear the crown. This is Triple M's Saturday Scrum.
What an effort from the Canberra Raiders. There were 20 points down to Manly. It was all party at Four Pines Park at that point. 20-0 they led. But the Raiders came back and managed to get that job done right at the death. Remarkable comeback.
Yeah, just another example of how big the momentum swings can be in the modern game. There's reasons for this with the new rule changes. They certainly take into effect a couple of six agains, keep that pressure on the opposition. All of a sudden, you get that momentum through the ruck. You have them on the back foot and you feel like you're in control of the game despite being down by so many points. And it was a couple of the old experienced head of Elliot White. He found a couple of plays there, the intercept before half time to find some points, and then he found that try.
He was on hands and knees when that ball fell in his lap. It was great.
He found a couple of tries after half time, and Manly will be really disappointed with that. Like, to have a 20-0 gap in the first half at home and they're not being able to put it away, particularly with the experience they have in, you know, Cherry Evans, Luke Brooks, Trbojevic brothers. You need to be put those games away, and unfortunately, they're the games you look back at in the back end of the year when you need to win the last three of your last four to get into the top four. You need to win the last one to get into the top four, and you just don't quite make it. There's that extra pressure, and you look back and go, "Oh, there's a valuable 2 points we let slip."
That may be exactly what Coach Anthony Seibold was thinking when he spoke to the media after the game.
You know, it's clear to see that, you know, we got what we deserved in the end. I think we're up 20-0. We just didn't have a hard enough edge to finish the job. And you've got to give Raiders credit. They got beaten 40-0, 5 days ago. So they played really tough. And they got what they deserved because they kept playing tough and they were full of effort. You know, I keep talking about we're in this cluster of teams that on any given day can beat anybody else. And we're trying to break that cluster. So for us to get to the next level that we want to do as a team, then we need to make sure that, you know, we finish games off like that. and because it's not easy, like the NRL's hard to, you know, it's a hard competition. It's probably the toughest in either rugby code in the world to win games. So yeah, that's our area for growth. We need to make sure that we finish the job off, and at the moment we allowed them to come back into the game and they were good enough to take it.
Yeah, should have got the job done 20-0 up.
Yeah, but without a doubt.
Yeah.
Chammy, is anyone monitoring these six agains?
What do you think?
Because what's happening, right, is during these games, the referee's just calling it but unless you're kind of there or obviously just on the screens, people watching it at TV at home, you just can't see what they're for and you can't justify it. And all of a sudden you just hear the ding on the screen and then the commentator will say, oh, there's a six again. So are they – obviously they're – going through that midweek, are they, with the referees' bosses? Because it's just changing. Wade spoke about, I mean, the amount of influence that has now in our game, it's just insane, these momentum swings. And the score blowouts is starting to get to the point where games are becoming boring, you know, because the sides are just having this football in that end of the field, and it always happens when they're attacking the goal line, and you just hear it. Last night, I think, you know, the Raiders at some point, and it was, I don't know whether it was warranted or not, it was the Sea Eagles in the first half when they scored those 20 points. The ref just kept going six again, six again. Then it will happen for the second half in the Raiders, and it just doesn't allow that team that's under the pressure to wrestle back momentum. It just becomes way too hard.
It sounds like to me you're calling the game stupid, Goods. is that what you're trying to say? The game is stupid?
I think the part of the game is as stupid as it's ever been, 20K. And probably stupider in certain areas.
Well,
no, I'm not affiliated
like.
With the organisation. But yeah, like, so it was an interesting one.
But
you know,
I just
hope that they're held accountable for every time that they feel like, because they don't do it all the time. And I hope they're not just picking and choosing the moments where they feel like they're just giving away those six against, because, you know, I think it's having a real detrimental effect on the game at the moment.
But maybe it is teams that are actually just toying with the rule because they're not going to get a penalty against them. So they are, you know, there are ruck infringements. They are offside.
Yeah, there's no doubt that teams, particularly on the goal line, they tread a fine line down there. They're willing to fight that little bit extra to gain that extra second because it's a benefit to your defensive line. And we saw the other night in the South Penrith game, Adam G got sick of it and he put Jai Arrow in the bin. But I agree with Gerds, in some games it feels like the refs, like over in Vegas, they did an awesome job. Ashley Klein did an awesome job. I forget who the other referee was, but he did an awesome job. The games were free-flowing. It was a great example of our product, and it's sort of like we knew we were on a big stage. We knew we had to give the best example of our product, so we let the game be played. And there's a reason we love Origin so much. It's because the players sort out the game. The refs take a backward step, and unless it's something very obvious that needs to be adjudicated on an act of foul play or someone's literally holding down for way too long, they let the game flow, and the players get in the rhythm. They earn their momentum through either a good kicking game or a great defensive effort. And it's a much better product to watch. And it's the same with finals. The refs take a step back and they let the natural rhythm of the game sort it out, because when you get to that level in the finals, in Origins, the players will sort it out.
You can't do it every week though, Wade, because if you do it every week, then they're going to take advantage of it. So that's why you sort of... This whole argument about, okay, we do these in the big games. Like, they did it in Vegas. They do it in Origin. But then if you keep doing it, they're just going to take advantage of the clubs, the coaches. They know that the refs aren't going to ping you
time,
for something.
Maybe it's time to rehash. If we're talking about how many rule changes we're happy to bring in, like maybe just the 5 minutes in bin or something like that. If there's repeated infringements, the ref can make a call to the captain on the run saying, listen, I'm not liking the way this is going. I'm not going to disrupt the game because you boys are taking the mickey out of me. Keep going and there will be a consequence.
But do you know, like, I take your point on a lot of rule changes and it's becoming a little bit confusing, but don't you think the spectacle of the game is as good as it has been in a long time?
Not when, as Gert is saying, all of a sudden one team has 10-6 against, the other team gets none, and then in the second half you flip it around, the other team gets 10-6 against, and
And the other, it's just been
it's actually a boring part of the field to watch attacking from. Like that 10 metres out from the line, and that's where it's always happening. And it's actually quite boring to watch sides just fumbling their way around the defensive line set. That's why the teams are giving away all that possession and the opportunities, because their confidence in their system just to withhold that period. It's boring attack. And I think sometimes, Wade, what frustrates me with some of the rule changes and referees not using discretion is, you know, sometimes you earn the right. So as you talk about, you know, when there's an arm wrestle, you're going tit for tat with the opposition, you finally start, you know, breaking through. You start earning the right just to get down and play down their end a little bit. And then all of a sudden, you know, you got your guys, you've kicked to a corner, everyone compresses up, and you leave that line a little bit early to jam the wingers and the fullbacks in the corner. You kind of earn the right to do that sometimes, but these days, same as when you're defending on your own line, you get back quick, you get up, you always got to get up that little bit quicker, but the referees are taking that right away that's actually been earned by the players, and I'd imagine that's really frustrating when that happens.
All that said, Graham Annesley did release some figures saying that long-range tries, there were far more of them this season than there has been for years, and talking about the quality and the, you know, the enjoyment of the game. It's one of those. I think the word is circle back to this.
Welcome to Tony's Spotting Quiz.
All right, you have to use your names as your buzzers. Could you test those for me, please?
Chamis.
Skipper.
Rippers.
Rippers.
Hey, Tone, I'm keeping score, eh?
See, I heard this about you.
Yeah, well, this isn't Junior Rugby League. We're not playing for fun. We're playing to win.
Okay.
You don't want to add my name and your name together, Wade, eh?
Skipper, Ripper.
And he stole my pen to keep score.
I'm keeping scores.
Man, you are needy, aren't you?
Don't want to lose. This day and age, everyone just wants to play for fun, participation awards. Let's win.
You're playing against two people who've played for Australia. Let me have something here. Yeah, and one person, me, who doesn't care. All right, are you ready? Question number one now. As we know, Ben Hornby has become the interim coach at South Sydney. Name two interim coaches from last season.
Skipper.
Yes, Skipper.
Oh, dear. That's a good question, yeah. Tony. That's a really good question. I'm gonna say the Dragons one. Yes. What was his name?
Ryan Carr.
That's it, Tony.
It's a half a point.
Is that a half a point?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to say the Tigers coach.
No, sorry. No. It was Jim Linehan from the Titans. Okay, it's all about South Sydney, obviously, the famous Cardinal and Myrtle. What colour is Cardinal?
Chamis.
Yes, Chamis.
50 here. We're just going to have a stab in the dark. It's green.
It's red!
Minus. Put minus next to the
minus. Cardinal. Can you please, Michael, can you tell me the scores,
right,
please?
It's minus one to minus half.
How did you get that wrong?
Yeah, that's
okay, South Sydney, we talked about Russell Crowe and his efforts. What was Russell Crowe's full name in Gladiator?
Rippers.
Yes, Rippers.
Maximus Aurelius. Oh, Decimus. Decimus Maximus Aurelius. Maximus Decimus Aurelius.
Oh, let's listen.
My name is Maximus Decimus Meridius.
Oh,
that's got to be half a point.
Yeah, that's two-thirds of a point,
Well, you know what? My old man's going to be filthy at that. I reckon we watched that movie 100 times when I was a kid.
Love it. In the 1970 Grand Final, South Sydney's John Sattler played with half a watt.
Skipper. Rippers.
Yes, Skipper.
He played with a half a jersey.
No, I'm not going to accept that.
Half a mouthful of teeth.
I almost accept that. Half a rabbit on his jersey.
Oh,
famously.
Jersey, Tony.
You said half a jersey. Half a point.
Okay.
Please to the scorer.
Okay.
Half a point.
I said jersey.
He didn't have all his teeth either. Come on.
No, half a point.
Half a point for half a rabbit, yeah. And you get half. Okay. This is going really well. My score's making sense.
All right. As a player, Jason Demetrio represented which country?
Rippers.
Yes, Rippers.
England?
No. Canada.
Oh,
that's your territory.
Name the clubs where Jason has been an assistant.
Rippers. Broncos. Yes. South.
Yes.
Is there more?
Yes, there's two more.
St. George.
Yes.
Where else has Wayne been? Newcastle.
Cowboys.
Yes, Cowboys is correct.
You can have point three.
0.25, 0.7.
Which AFL club shakes down the thunder from the sky?
Chamis.
Yes.
GWS. Swans!
I have to.
It's just my Western Sydney allegiance. I just naturally think Western
Sydney. I'm sorry. Let's have a listen to what it sounds like.
Yeah. This is an embarrassing hour.
They'll be doing that when they play GWS this afternoon. What's your score, Michael?
-0.75.
This is the greatest afternoon of my life. Sam Walker was on a streak of 23 goals in a row before he missed one last night. Who has the longest streak?
Chamis.
Yes, Chamis.
Hazem El-Masri
with 35. He also got 31 and a run of 29. Gerds, do you remember what yours was?
Yeah, it was up there. 29.
Give him a point for that. That's it.
I think we've got one more question.
No more questions.
One for Gerds.
Mm-hmm.
0.75 for me.
A lot for Wade.
And Wado, 0.7 plus 0.5. Yeah, Wade wins. He wins.
Great to have your company, Tony Squires, Ryan Girdler, Wade Graham, Michael Chamis with you. We've just completed the quiz in which Michael decided it needed to be competitive and needed to keep the scores. It really came back and bit him in the ass, to be honest, quite frankly. Yeah.
He's still got my pen as well.
Oh, sorry.
Is he? You're a pen stealer. Ryan Girdler's a pen stealer.
Is he?
True or false?
He's also one of the greatest.
There's a certain type of pen that if I see it, I will take it.
Really?
I won't take any pen.
What qualifies?
These art line ones, the ones that I'm holding, you can't see them at home, obviously. Those art line ones, like 0.2, if I see one of them laying around, it's in the pocket.
Yeah, exactly. But it's not like you go up and somebody's got a Mont Blanc and steal it. Let's get that clear.
No. It's just these art line ones. They're the only ones I use.
Yeah, so you're a little bit special.
I smack the kids if they steal my pens. Don't smack your kids, everyone at home. Parents, better ways.
Exactly.
Unless they steal your pen.
Well, during that quiz, the question was after Sam Walker had kicked 23 consecutive goals and then missed the next one, who held the record? That was Hazem El-Masri with 35. I asked Ryan what was his record. We've just found out, Gerds, not the consecutive ones, but in the Super League year, you kicked 76 from 82.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
It was unbelievable. I couldn't believe it.
Did you practice?
It was ridiculous.
Did you practice much back then?
I didn't practice at all because, you kids at home, because the ball were that round, right? And it was kind of a different shape. It was like a rugby ball. So they were a little bit easier to kick. And I had this philosophy back then that if I'm kicking well on the weekends and I've got nothing to fix, that I don't want to tinker with it midweek. So that year I didn't do any practice at all because I just didn't miss. And the one that I missed, I remember I was on a bit of a run. It was a penalty. It was about 35 metres out from directly in front. I hadn't missed one in a while against the Bulldogs. And I struck it and missed. And my whole teammates, instead of chasing, sort of looked at me as if to say, what just happened? Yeah, so.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
I didn't realise the balls were a different shape in Super League.
Yeah, they were a little bit rounder from memory.
And the goalposts sounded like they were about 2 metres wide. 2 metres wide
were bigger.
Asterix, yeah. That's what
and every kick was in front.
That's right. No matter where you scored, you got a kick from in front. What's happened, just quickly, Michael, in terms of injuries, big stories all round?
Yeah, the big news this morning, Cameron Murray, boys, hip flexor injury, 8 weeks on the sidelines, likely to miss the first couple of games of Origin as well. Adam Reynolds goes under the knife this week. He'll miss about 12 weeks with a ruptured bicep. Jesse Arthurs, he has surgery today on a broken jaw. He'll be out for 2 months as well. And the news doesn't get better for South Sydney. Dean Hawkins, Jai Gray, they're out for a couple of months as well. So the Rabbitohs struggling to field a team at the moment.
Yeah, all bad news for the Cardinal and Myrtle. What colour is Cardinal?
Red.
Thank you very much. The Panthers and the Rabbitohs. We talked about the Rabbitohs and the turmoil that has been there for the past little while now. They led 12-0 under Ben Hornby as interim coach against the Panthers. And then it all turned around and the Panthers did what the Panthers do.
Yeah, well, leading into that game after the week, the turmoil the Souths had, you just knew they had to put their best foot forward if there would be any chance. And they had an opportunity. Isaac Tungo on that hip drop got put 10 in the bin straight away. They come back to that left. Cody Walker throws a cutout ball. They find some points in the overlap. They march them up the field, get a 6 again. They finish on the Penrith try line. They find some more points. And hang on a minute, it's 12-0. Could this be one of the greatest victories ever? But all of a sudden, that Penrith machine just wears you into the ground. And because they threw so much energy into the start of their game, they were really up for it, the Rabbitohs. As soon as Penrith gained that little bit of ascendancy, the energy completely switched and the Rabbits were running on empty, and Penrith do what Penrith do and were in control for most of that game. Souths were spirited. They fought for a long time, but that try, I forget who scored the first try that took Penrith to the lead, and then that Dylan Edwards runaway where he picked the ball up over their ball line, raced to the 20 and put May away. That just broke the hearts of South Sydney, and they really didn't have any answers after that.
At 12-0, Ben Hornby had done Wayne Bennett out of a contract. The way they started that game, but they're always Penrith the way that they play. I know that Nathan's a big loss, but we've spoken about before, the guys that come in, they just fill that void. And I hate to say it, their success is starting to get a little bit boring, Penrith, isn't it? They're just so good, and you just wait for them to slip up, but they just don't. And I imagine they're going to, it'd be hard to stop them making a four in a row.
What's that saying that the best form of flattery is imitation? Like Brad Snyder, he actually looks, his mannerisms, the way he holds the ball, the way he moves and passes. It looks like he's been following Nathan around with not just the old notebook, but with a video camera, and he's been doing the moves at home. He looks exactly as he gets around.
Yeah, he scored a Nathan Cleary style try as well.
It's so impressive. Like that team, you run out of good things to say, and I don't find them boring.
They're not boring. You know what I'm saying? Their success is it's so predictable now. They don't look like they're going to slow down. Not just next year. I know they're losing some key players, but they always replace them.
It's funny as a player who played against them, and you just feel how they just take the energy away from you and just sap you because they do all the little things right, but their game plan is so simple but so effective. You see it every game at the start of the game, even not Nathan because he's not there, but the halves, they'll take their outside backs to the line, they'll turn them under, they'll turn their back row, Liam Martin under, Luke Garner on another edge, and they just waste the opposition's middle. They just take all that energy away from them, and they don't let off. And then the moment you can tell that the energy and the fatigue is in the other team, that's when they play it to the edge, and they strip their opposition edge for numbers, and they just, their tries on the edges are almost walking because they just do so much damage to the opposition's middle.
Ryan Girdley, you wouldn't find it boring at all, I would imagine.
No, well, I mean, I was kind of, that game against Manly a few weeks ago when they had that loss, it was kind of interesting to watch how Manly sort of pulled them apart that afternoon. And I thought a few teams might have sort of obviously taken notice of that because you just don't see that too often. But yeah, for me, the markers with Penrith are, you know, and it happened the other night when I was AEO goes to the line and continues to run through the line. It always tells me that. Yeah, they've worn the opposition down. Generally, he'll go in early and you'll see him pass out the back and that'll create their shapes on the edges. But the other night, after about 25 minutes, Isaiah Yeo was just making like 25, 30 metres when he was just on play one or two. And I knew that's when South Sydney were broken. And yeah, and we talk about a lot, but it's the same things every week that Penrith do well that just make it really difficult for, you know, the opposition. And that's, you know, the amount of numbers they get into tackles and the way they work you over on the ground. It's the intricacies to their game. Everyone wants to have line speed and everyone wants to do the same things, but their ability to do it tackle after tackle, the technique they use, it's really complex. They've got these complex defensive systems that just allow them that when they've got the football and they're disciplined, just to break teams down. And they did it again the other night and they'll continue to do it. And everyone's just got to find a way to either emulate what they do defensively or come up with ways to trouble them playing a different style of game. But at the moment, yeah, what they do just hurts.
Does the window close, Gertz? Fisher-Harris, Luai, Taruva, is this...
Yeah, he's the biggest loss. Like, for mine, Chama, he's the biggest loss that they've had because I've always sort of gone back to the fact that while they've got Dylan there, while they've got, Nathan there, While they've got Isaiah, and while they've got Fisher-Harris there, they'll be okay regardless of, you know, who needs to leave. But for me, he's irreplaceable. He's changed the fabric of that organisation. I've been sort of talking to people at the club about him for the last 10 years and the impact he had when he first came in. And he's going to leave a big hole, and I'm not sure there's anyone in their junior systems that can fill that. And maybe Moses is going to play a bigger role, but he's impossible to replace.
Can I throw something at you? Now, the Dylan Edwards coming out to take the tap and running away has been spoken about as a measure of South Sydney's either lack of fitness or lack of commitment because they didn't get back to be onside. Only Jai Arrow who did that and chased all the way. As a fan, I don't like that anyway. The whole thing of being on the attack, being close there, and a kick maybe 1 centimetre wrong, and suddenly you're in a sprint race to get back, and they can go with the 100. I know once that's the rule, and you have to have that commitment, show that commitment, but it always seems to me to be a slightly unfair thing.
Yeah, well, let me tell you, whenever a halfback kicked the dead, I was never happy with them, that's for sure, because, like you said, you do feel like you're in attack and you're in a strong position, but then such a small error of skill. And a lot of these times, well, that ball the other night only trickled over just. And it actually, when they trickle over, it's worse because you have that ability to chase all the way. And then that output of energy where the football, where the fullback's just sitting and waiting, and it rolls over, picks it up and race back to the 20. Yeah, it's not fun as a player, but it is just, it's an area of our game that probably started maybe 5-6 years ago, because I remember when it used to be the long pass in, and then you just wait until the defensive line was set, and then they changed the rule until if you run it in, then
go.
But yeah, it's an opportunity for, we talk about momentum swings and the referee's effect on the game and on momentum. That's an opportunity where a team, you defended your goal line, or you defended to the end of the sixth, your opposition has made a mistake. We're going to use this little opportunity, if our OB gets the ball fast enough, to race back there and flip that momentum on its head and take the advantage from your mistake. So it is a mistake from the opposition, but it's a small area where a team will sense it and go, okay, here's the opportunity to put the pressure straight back on the opposition.
And that's why, Wado, I don't like the change in the rule for the dropout and taking away the penalty of because I don't think there's enough reward for the success of the back end of that set. It's a real skill. And the penalties you just spoke about, and we saw it last night, but the reward's not there anymore for those players to get that kick in the end goal. And most teams now, you're seeing it, making a decision just to run it on the last, and that's not what we want to see. We don't want to see. We want to see these, you know, talented playmakers either finding a gap through there with their kick or putting one over to the corner to make sure that, you know, their outside backs have got an opportunity to outjump the opposition. And unfortunately, sides are going to start thinking against that if we keep penalising players for, you know, or not rewarding those players enough for their actions.
Unless, just do what Samuel Afainu did, just tackle him. That was brilliant. Cost them the game.
Cost
but
them
it was
the
brilliant.
Game. Absolutely. Tell me, Michael, what's the situation with Nathan Cleary now? He was rested. It was a 5-day turnaround. They came back from Townsville. He'd had a couple of weeks off with that hamstring. But it was just, we've been told, just to kind of, rather than risk him, they would let him rest out.
Yeah, I don't think that's, yeah, he's had obviously a history of hamstrings. Nathan Cleary, they want to make sure that he's okay. And he's about to go through a grueling period with Origin. I think Penrith have got one eye on the back end of the year already, like resting Taruva the week before. They have the luxury, if someone's head's not right, they rest them. And with Nathan, with all due respect to South Sydney, I think there was a feeling as though we can get through this one without it. And we may have to do it in the future. So the more games we get under our belt that we can win without Nathan, the more confidence we instill in this team. He'll be okay.
How far away from State of Origin are we? Weeks?
Team is picked in 3 weeks.
Team will be picked in 3 weeks.
Yep.
Okay, that's Michael Maguire, obviously, will be coaching that. Who will be there? Well, one position, obviously, that's going to be hotly contested. James Tedesco, been plenty of talk about the captain. Will he be there? Well, the past couple of weeks, he's played sensational rugby league. There's a lot of contenders. We've mentioned Dylan Edwards, who's, again, playing brilliantly. How do you fit them both in? Do you fit them both in? Let's have a little chat about that number one jersey. Ryan Gerler, who's getting it for you?
Yeah, gee, that is a really that's a tough one. I think it's going to come down to who they pick, you know, to play in some of those other key positions. And you would imagine, especially now that Murray's out, that Yeo's going to slot into 13, Cleary's going to slot into 7, and so then a lot of people would just expect that Dylan Edwards and that combination, Appy Coruscant, you would have to say is going to be at 9 during some moments of that game. You'd have to be one of those positions. So yeah, you could go, you know, with that Penrith club option, and I'm sure it wouldn't let you down. I've been really impressed with Tommy Turbo's form lately. You know, he had a couple of moments that weren't great last night, but just his ability just to be on the ball and running first off the ruck, and his big body, always tempting to, you know, he can play in the centres, but to have him back there as well, and then it's hard every time you think that, you know, Teddy might have done himself out of a jersey because of, you know, some of the other form of these players. He comes out and plays like he did last night. He was exceptional. So it's going to come down to the wire, Tone. So I'm not sure at this point.
Is Tommy the only guy who is in the team if he's not fullback, though, Gerds? Like, you don't pick Teddy and Dylan Edwards out of position, do you? Tommy's the only one who can justify that.
Yeah, I wouldn't. No, I wouldn't. I've never seen Teddy play in another position. And I think, you know, I had a look at Dylan last year in the playing for Australia on the wing, and it's just not the same sort of role for him. So I think one of those guys just gets the job and the other one just needs to wait in the wings. And if there's an injury or there's an opportunity later in the series, they might get the nod.
Yeah, I agree with Gerds. It's they're both going to do an exceptional job for you. Know this. I think Teddy's the captain. And the thing for Dill is they're really similar players. They're both workhorses. They both carry late in the set. They both build. They're not as if they're the type of ball players that'll sit on the short side and overcore stuff or be another creative player. They're workhorse players. So I feel like if you wanted to change a style, you'd almost change to a Tommy Turbo who sets up different shapes and is not afraid to play off the ball. So just because they're so similar and Teddy's the captain, I feel like he gets the shot. I feel like at this stage, the way he's playing, he was outstanding last night. He was outstanding the week before against the Dragons. He was exceptional as well. And I feel like he's ready for it and he deserves his shot. But Dill's so close. Like, there's nothing really else that he could do. And if Teddy wasn't the captain, you'd probably go, Dill's the man, right? It's that tight of a race. And fortunately for us, you know, they're pushing each other. We need them to be pushing each other. So in a few weeks' time when the team's picked, they're playing well.
Regard, though, Wado, don't those combinations then become important? You spoke about, you know, the different styles. Don't those combinations, if you've got the 7 and the 13 playing there from a club level and, you know, they know their game inside out, have played in so many big moments together, does that carry weight?
Listen, I don't think, like, very rarely do you see Dylan gets passed the ball from Isaiah Yeo. If anything, Isaiah Yeo's going to Nath and then Nath is dishing to Dylan Edwards. Like, Teddy's good enough to build off that. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, you see them both carry the ball on play 4. That they will hold a short 4, but normally that's just to count numbers or to hold the defender on that side. So they're really similar. And it's just the fact that I think Teddy's playing the type of footy he's playing. Like, if he was playing the same type of footy he was last year, where he's just not at his best, you'd probably go to Dill. But I just think game one, Teddy deserves his shot, but it's such a close call. And, you know, you feel bad for Dill because he's been in the premiership winning team and a big part of that team for the last 3 seasons and even in the year before when they lost the grand final. So,
but you're right, with the way that he's playing Teddy, it's not being picked on sentiment, it's being picked on...
He's playing well. He's certainly playing. He's doing his job for that team over there at the Roosters and he's back. He's back to his best. So I think he gets the nod.
With what happened last year with Tom Trbojevic and the drama that followed with Damien Cook having to come on and play centre with the decision that was made, can New South Wales afford to carry it back on the bench this year, or do they have to? How do you handle that? And if that's the case, are one of these is Dylan on the bench?
Well, it depends what they want to do with their hookers. Like, if you carry 2 hookers, then you can't carry utility. If you carry someone, if you plan to say you play Appy 80 minutes and you carry a Cam McInnes on your bench, who if for some reason Appy needs a rest or there's an injury, we got cover there. And if you have someone like Cam, you plan on him being a middle, but he's a 9 cover, well, then you can have 2 big boys and, you know, a utility-type player, whether that's a back row utility or an outside back utility. It's all about the balance of the team and who else is in and around. And, again, we spoke about guys like Cam Murray. Like, not just is he a great player in his position, but the value of having him in your team is he can go into any of the... Yeah, his versatility adds to that team, so there's a lot of decisions to be made and a lot will be made on the balance of the team and how the team complements each other, because you need to execute your plan. You need to have your plan in your head. Like, if you have a perfect game, this is how it's going to go, but you need to have some, you know, contingencies as well.
But if you're going to pick a player on attitude, you can't split their attitude. Both of those guys are exactly the right, you know, makeup for going in there and having success at that level. So you can rule that out.
Yeah. So does Cam McInnes. He's got a great attitude. I love Heine saying he looked like a Chucky doll the other night. He does just get his head wherever, doesn't he? He's quite amazing. when we're talking about those fullbacks, it's interesting when you see somebody who's not used to being there in terms of that positioning. When poor old Damien Cook had to play fullback the other night, and, you know, and bombs were bouncing 10 metres in front of him, you know, it's a, that position is so key. And we have so many great players ready to take that number one.
For King G, you wear the crown. This is Triple M's Saturday Scrum.
Michael Chamis, Wade Graham, Ryan Girdler, my name is Tony Squires. All right, we're talking about Sky Blue jerseys. What about Latrell Mitchell? Now, he has said, well, he's been reported to have said, might have been from your pen, Michael.
Yes.
That he would rather than playing State of Origin, he wants to stick around and help South Sydney out of the hole that he's partly helped dig.
Not quite. He's considering it. He's considering it. And
is it to him to consider?
Well, if he feels a debt to South Sydney, given the situation they find themselves in and the situation that he put himself in with that forearm on Sean Johnson, which meant he missed the next 3 weeks, well, actually, if I'm a Souths fan, I'm glad he's thinking that way, to be honest with you. I'm not saying he will go down that path, and maybe he does make himself available, and everyone keeps saying he wasn't going to get picked anyway, whatever. But really, I want him thinking that way because you do feel as though he owes the club. And it's probably not going to matter. Their season's, what, you'd say it's gone. Their season's over, especially with the injury they've got. So I'm glad that he feels that way. Would he go down that path? Would he even get picked? I know the one thing's for sure, Madge will want him at least available if he needs him there. And the NRL, they may look to enforce a rule which hasn't really been enforced before.
That you can't play for your club if you make yourself unavailable for representative football.
Which the argument from the NRL is the players get paid a lot of money, and a lot of that money is generated by the income that is brought to the game through Origin. So therefore, you are obliged to play State of Origin. I can understand Latrell's thinking if this is the way he goes, but you also can say the NRL hasn't enforced this in the past. What happened last year when Kalyn Ponga didn't play Origin? I'm pretty sure he played for Newcastle those weeks when he said he wasn't going to play for Billy. So,
did he officially make himself unavailable, or did he just make a phone call to Billy and say, "Don't pick me"?
I imagine Latrell could do the same thing, just ring Madge and say, "Don't pick me." It's not going to go down well with Madge though, because he wants to pick players who want to be there. But he also wants to win, and having Latrell, a fit and firing Latrell, unavailable if he's down that path coming back after 3 weeks and playing well, it hurts Magic.
Yeah, I think we're a little bit premature on this sort of chat. Like, well, I don't find if he's thinking it now, I don't know, even if it is true or isn't true. Look, he's had to sit on the sideline for 3 weeks to watch his club just continue to slide down. So he's the foremost of his thinking should be his club. And there's no doubt he'll be itching to get out there next weekend and finally get back on the field. Now, if he comes out and brains it for 3 weeks, he might be thinking, you know, his headspace might be a little bit different when that team is picked. On the flip side, if the team's still struggling and he doesn't find that form, well, the decision might be made for him. I think all we're doing now is speculating. But there's no doubt how Shemmy just finished. Like, if he comes back and he's fit and firing, and the Latrell Mitchell that we know is back and he's playing well, then for sure Madge will be, he'll be in contention for that team, like, easily.
Oh, I think he probably just doesn't want the circus that comes with it around that time of year, you know, the distraction that he is, are you going to get in, are you not going to, and he's such a big personality. So, yeah, I'm with the boys. If I'm Latrell, I'm just keeping my powder dry, I'm just sitting back, I'm only talking about, you know, South Sydney, I'm going back there and I'm trying to find some good form, and look, it's a long series. You know, it doesn't, it goes through the next couple of months. So if you're not in the first one, that's fine, you know, but don't rule yourself out of the possibility of, you know, finding your form at club, changing your headspace, and then, you know, contributing for your state at some point.
We touched on this subject in the first hour, Gerd, certainly. Just worth mentioning again. Now, the Eels have reportedly passed on Wayne Bennett, said they don't have a coaching spot available at the moment. And to stick with Brad Arthur, is it a good move?
If you're Brad Arthur, it is, yeah. It's the commentary around it and a lot of the fans' reaction to it, I think the fans would have loved the Eels to at least have a crack at Wayne Bennett. And if they're going to wait another 3 or 4 weeks, Wayne Bennett's not going to be on the market by then. So to what the point Gerd's made earlier, do you really risk the future of the organisation by not having a crack because of timing? I can understand they want to do the right thing by Brad. He's had a lot of time at the club, and they want to do the. They don't want to be seen to be going out and looking elsewhere. But if someone comes to you saying Wayne Bennett is interested at exploring the option of joining your club, it's a pretty gutsy move to say no. No, thank you. I don't know, Gerds. Everyone would have been up Parramatta and saying, what are you doing? This is the wrong thing to do to your coach. You're either going to sack him now or get Wayne. Well, you can't do both. And they haven't done both.
Yeah, that's the difficult part of it, Chammy, isn't it? The fact that, you know, they probably would like Brad to see out potentially to the end of the season. Maybe they've got no one there waiting now to take the reins for the rest of the year, which is what would probably happen if you're going to bring someone in and terminate a contract, because Brad's got another couple of years, doesn't he?
He's got one more year on his deal.
Yeah, so it's a difficult in that regard. But let me ask you, boys, if Wayne Bennett agrees to coach the Parramatta Eels next year, what do you... And in the off season, all of a sudden, where do Parramatta end up in the betting, in the market next year? Are you guys a little bit more excited about their prospects, or do you think that, they'll probably just finish where they have in the last couple of years?
I think the injuries have played a key part, but you're right. Wayne Bennett, it'll add this so much excitement, and the point being made this week is around the voice. They've heard the same voice for 10 years, or a lot of them have heard it for the best part of 5 or 6 years. Yeah, maybe it's time for change, but... Knowing the Eels board and the members on that board the way I do, I don't think they have it in them to do the wrong thing by Brad Arthur.
Well, it certainly rocked the boat there within, like, the players' point of view, because I've never had anything to do with Brad throughout my career, only sort of seen him around the traps when we versed Parramatta. But I get the feeling that all those players there, they love him.
Oh, they do.
They love him and they respect him, and... Yes, they might not have, and they've gone through some ups and downs together. They reached a prelim, they reached the grand final, they felt agonisingly short, and maybe in the future they do need to look for that new voice, the one that can make them finally reach that mountain, you know, take them to the hallowed ground. But I feel if they do it in a way that disrespects Brad and the relationship he has with all those players, that the rocking of the boat might be a bit too much. And I certainly hear what you're saying, Gerds, too, about... They can't make a decision like in 4 or 5 weeks. And because if you say you do want to move Brad on, well, there's got to be someone there waiting. And not just someone that you think is going to be that one to take him to the next level, because he has achieved not a premiership, but he's achieved quite a lot of that club. So I think the Eels board know how much the playing group respects Brad and love Brad. And they certainly, if they're going to make any decision on his future, they need to do it in the right way and with respect.
All right, two words, Gus Gould. Now, he's copped a $20,000 fine, $10,000 of it suspended, for what he had to say on 100% footy, talking about rules and the game and the nature of the game, specifically about Appy Coruscant and the try and the no try. Let's have a listen to what he had to say.
Our game is so stupid. You can lose the ball over the line scoring a try... Right, and you get penalised 20 metres and 7 tackles. It cost the Canberra try yesterday. You lose the ball over the line, it costs you 20 metres and 7 tackles. Why? I don't know, because it's stupid. But I can just take a line drop, and if it goes out on the floor, doesn't go 10 metres, no consequence, nothing at all. What sort of stupid game is this? Who sits and makes up these rules? Obstructors. And he didn't have his eyes on the ball, and he bumped into him, and he ran behind him. Obstruction. Well, Appy Coruscant try. What the hell was that?
cost you 20 metres and $20,000. You know what? That's entertaining. That is entertaining. There are two sides to this, okay, which we can get to. One is what he says wrong or right? Two is he allowed to say it? Was the NRL right in saying you are an official and part of the game, therefore from inside the house you can't throw those rocks?
I was sitting next to him when he was going off.
Yep.
And I was sitting next to him at the ad break when he was laughing after it as well. Like, it's he's frustrated, but that's part of the theatre, right? And I'm not going to justify the fact that he's a registered official of the game. The NRL will sanction him based on that. But that was theatre. That was interesting to watch. And I've been on the receiving end of it as well. I actually wrote last year a story saying that Phil Gould has upset the clubs, and the clubs have complained to the NRL. It was over the Jacob Preston hip drop incident. Remember last year on Good Friday that he was sent to the sin bin charge, and he blew up about it. And the clubs went to the NRL and said, he can't do this. He can't try and influence the match review committee or the judiciary by commentary he makes. It's an unfair position that he's allowed to be in. And the NRL, they warned the Bulldogs. They said, he can't do this. They can't do this. On a scale of 1 to 10, reality is that he's said a lot worse over the past that he could have been sanctioned for, but I think this was the final straw. I actually find him really, really entertaining. I don't agree with him a lot of the time. I think he's really, really good on television. And whether you love him or hate him, you listen to him. And a lot of people hate him. A lot of people like him as well. It's a hard one, though, because the NRL are fed up because they don't want – they are going – they're having clubs come to them and say, this is not fair. This bloke can get away with it. He is running a football team. He's running a football club. And then you want to fine our coaches for saying something in a press conference when you're letting him get away with this?
Yeah, that's the problem, because it's duplicitous if you, you know, fine one and not the other. Absolutely. What do you make of it?
Well, I agree with him. I think some of the rules are ridiculous. Like, this disrupt the rule, like – you spend the whole game trying to disrupt your opposition, trying to get the ball back off them, tackle them harder, get in their head, like beat them in every way. And then now all of a sudden you're not allowed to disrupt them. Like, oh, I think that's a silly rule. And for that, the way he said it, you got to take it in context. Like, he's on TV there. He's paid to be on TV, to have an opinion and to be an entertainer. And I found that entertaining. I thought it was funny there. Okay. If you put it in a script, and he sent it in a complaint to the NRL, or it was spread around.
Yeah.
The way he wrote it, it might come across bad, but, you know, the word was theatre. That was exactly what it was. He was acting up, slamming the bottle on the table. Like, he was acting and entertaining, so I don't mind it. I think you got to look at it in context. Yeah, I get the argument, but he's a registered official at a club, but he's also Gus Gould. Like, he's been in the game longer than most of us have been alive. So certain people, you know, get treated differently, as the great Sam Burgess would say. Like, Gus gets treated a little bit differently because he's earned his stripes to do that. Yep. So I don't have a problem with it.
There is some truth. Sorry, Gerds, get you set. Go.
Yeah, you go, Tone.
Yeah, there is some. The truth in what he says, though, with the Appy chorus, our try, is that half a millimetre of separation is all we're talking about from that being a try or a no try. So there's contention over that. But when you are so close to scoring a try, that the other team does get the ball out 20 metres and get the seven tackles set. When anywhere else on the field, that knock-on doesn't have anywhere near the penalty.
Yeah.
You can understand that kind of weirdness going on in his head for, you know, anybody who watches the game.
And I think the fact that he was talking about another team as well sort of needs to carry a little bit of weight. He wasn't banging on about the Bulldogs. And then I see him just for being that, for being a personality that, as Wade said, has earned the right to have an opinion. And the good thing is that the NRL, I think they need to hear this. They need to hear, you know, some of the sharper minds in our game speaking about things that they've brought in that don't make any sense. And the fact that they've heard it, you know, like, I mean, everyone should chip in and help. Not that he needs it, Gus, but to pay that 10K because we need more people like him and you know, with the sharper minds in our game talking about some of these rules that no one understands. They're ridiculous and we need to change them.
Yeah. He started a GoFundMe page. So that
well, I gave him that water bottle for him to calm down. I gave it to him to have a drink, not to use as a prop to show us how the try wasn't scored.
Well, he hit Lucas Herbert's caddy with it.
He did throw it, actually. No one saw that on camera. But the conflict of interest, though, boys, there's a lot of it in our game in the media with former players. If you look at it, like, you've got, you know, Mick Ennis, who's an assistant at Manly. You've got Billy's the Queensland Origin coach. Brait's a registered player agent. He's on 360. Cooper does stuff with clubs. Like, it's everywhere. Wade, you're with the Sharks. Like,
so controversial too.
You are. So be careful what you say, because you could be fined after this. But like, that's why I think the NRL is trying to draw a line in the sand, because there are actually more and more people that's involved true. In the media who do have conflicts of interest. And I reckon there are a few people walking a fine line at the moment. And I think the NRL wanted to lay down the law, draw a line in the sand and say, You are Gus, yes, but you're not going to be held to a different account to everyone else.
Okay, if anyone is listening, get rid of the disruptor rule, please.
Jomo, I think it now comes to you, your chance to lay before us your brilliant new idea about the interchange bench.
Well, Tone, I floated the idea on 100% footy on Monday, and look, I'm used to getting a lot of abuse on social media, but the fans were out. They loved me. Felt good, yeah. Everyone was bagging Gal for poo-pooing my idea. Look.
Well, he's used to that too, to be honest. So.
Yeah, well, that's true, actually. There's not many people on that panel who get a lot of love between us. Actually, Brace gets some love. Anyway, my idea, right?
Yep.
It's on the back of the Moses Sully incident on Anzac Day out in the first minute of the game. There are a few games now being ruined this year because players in key positions are getting injured and there isn't cover for them on the bench, because a lot of teams will carry three forwards and a hooker. I don't understand why we don't go as a game to a six-man bench. Still the same system. You get to use four players, but at least you can choose from the six depending on the situation of the game. Like the other day, the Dragons would have been able to bring on an outside back. Or if it's late in the game and you're chasing points and if you only use three of the four subs, you can actually bring on a young player or someone like a David Armstrong who may not normally play at Newcastle, a young debutant, but you can leave him on your bench in case you're chasing points. And the point you made earlier about Dylan Edwards and Origin, maybe he sits on that bench and if you need him, he can come on. Because at the moment, there are too many games that are being decided on injuries to key players in early on in the game, even late in the game, when you need that position covered and no one is willing to cover those positions. I think it adds to the game. I rank Peter Volandis on the way here. I said, am I a genius or an idiot? And before he even listened to my idea, he told me I was an idiot. He said, is this another one of your harebrained ideas? And I said, well, I ran it through it with him. The first thing he said, well, what about the extra $1 million it's going to cost in having to fly people, extra people to games? I said, well, it's not true because you fly 19 now. You fly an 18th man and a 19th player just in case. So it doesn't change anything from that point of view. And he ended up coming around and he likes the idea. So I just wanted to know, am I an idiot or you're liking what I'm thinking here with what we could do with the interchange bench?
Well, independently of what we think of you, you're an idiot. Just clarify, so you're not having a six-man interchange bench. It's still restricted to four.
It's still restricted to four, but you have the option of choosing that four from a six-man bench.
I don't immediately dislike it. I can see the merit in it. You know, but I was always a big fan of the rule when if you were to come off, you don't get to go back on.
Mm.
So have six on your bench, limit the interchanges to the four. You're only allowed four different people, like you can use four people. But if a player comes off, he's not allowed to go back on.
Hang on. Who's like, you can't just steal my thunder. Oh, well, I thought I was throwing my idea. Now you're just ruining it.
That's like the old days way.
Yeah, I love that,
mate. Just have reserves.
I love that. Have the reserves. Have as many as you want there. But if a player comes off, he's not allowed back on. And, you know, the top players always want more money. Well, this is a way where you pay your best players the amount of money. They stay out there as long as they can. But if they come off, you're off, brother. And then you talk about the speed of the game, the little halfbacks coming back into it. Well, there's going to be genuine fatigue back out there because of that. So I was a fan of that. Not to take away from your idea. I see the merit in it.
Back in the day, it was two reserves and they both played in reserve.
Yeah, they played in reserve. Okay,
You can't, like, to ask players to play 60 minutes straight, then you get fatigue issues, then you get, I know we want fatigue in the game, but then you start talking about concussions and people putting their heads in the wrong spot. I don't think you can ask players to go back
You're not on the being the kickoff.
Well, he's actually come up with solutions so that we don't need to bend the kickoff by the sound of
things,
right. Camo. Yeah?
That's right. You can just go hell for leather, and if you get knocked out, don't worry. We've got some cover.
Yeah. And I also think that it would provide a little bit cover for those situations as well, where it mightn't push coaches so hard to try and get players. And I know that they shouldn't, but sometimes it obviously happens when you got a key player or a player that you haven't got cover for on the bench who's had a head knock. You know, you might just try that little bit harder to get them back on the field, whereas if you've got the options there of some different kind of players on your bench with the allocation of six reserves, well, then they might be a little bit more inclined just to use one of those players and not actually try and push someone a little bit too hard back on to try and get them back onto the field. So you're an idiot, Chamo, but I don't mind it.
Mate, my phone's ringing hot. I'm just getting text messages saying how good of an idea it is.
Yeah, well, Phil Gould called to tell you what he thought about your idea as well, actually.
Our game is so stupid.
That's so good.
And that would be the kindest thing he's ever said to me.
Exactly. What about, would the two guys, would the guys get not enough footy elsewhere if they're sitting around and not getting a run in the NRL as well?
Well, is the 18th man playing cup anyway?
Well, they normally, they play definitely if the game is after the game. Yeah. Like, so if the 18th man in the first grade game and the reserve grade game is the day after, they definitely play. Some coaches have risked players and played them for half a game, so they just get a little bit of match fitness. And, of course, if for some reason they were to get injured, there's always that opportunity to bring someone else into the squad. But that's a part of managing your squad. If I've been 18th man 3 weeks in a row and I need a run, well, I need a run. I need to play reserve grade.
A few weeks ago, Toby Sexton came on as 18th man for the Bulldogs when they were needing forwards. Like, it didn't really help them in that situation. At least if you had the option then of picking from two people to be your 18th man, or potentially you might have had three at that time if you haven't used them. So I think it just provides this element of flexibility and excitement, because these young guys, who, like someone like a Jai Gray, who wasn't getting a run in the first 6 or 7 weeks in the competition, he would have been sitting on your bench. And if you're chasing points, you're down by 10 with 10 to go, you know what? I've got a sub up my sleeve. I'm bringing Jai Gray on.
It's funny, Chamo, that you speak about that and Wade as well. You know, like I remember coming through the system where, you know, I'd play 21s when I was about 17, 18, and then I'd sit on the bench for reserve grade, never get a game, but always be sitting there, and then I'd sit on the bench for first grade as well. And I think it was about 15 weeks in a row, to the point where I started eating pies while I was sitting on the bench reserve grade. I was never going to get a chance. And then one day, because of the situation, I was actually given that opportunity, and it was because we were probably, you know, in front by a certain margin or whatever, and it gave me an opportunity to play first grade when maybe I wouldn't have if it was a different situation because, you know, Ronnie Hilditch and Graham Murray, they used to put like 10 guys on the bench and just pick for who they wanted to, but it was in the system of once you go on, you can't go off. So a different system, but he's got some merit there, Chamo.
Wow. I think I'm going to start a campaign. I'm going to get this happening.
He's running up the flagpole and several people have saluted, ladies and gentlemen.
It's going to happen.
Well done, you.
For King G, you wear the crown. This is Triple M's Saturday Scrum.
The Cam Munster story. He is going to be playing his 200th NRL game tonight. And I read in today's papers how torn he was about the offer, $6 million offer he got from the Dolphins and eventually turned that down.
Yeah, massive. The Melbourne Storm did well to keep Cameron Munster there. He's been an exceptional player. Came on the scene as a fullback, and really, this is one thing that everyone sort of says about Nathan, that he hasn't stamped his authority on representative football. You cannot say the same thing about Cameron Munster. The way he has stepped up in big games, big moments, and owned them, it'll be what he's remembered for when he retires. He's a larrikin, and he's a throwback to a footballer of years gone by. The way he behaves and the way he likes to have a joke off the field. But, mate, honestly, Wade, big games, Cameron Munster, has there been many better?
Yeah, well, he's just a player. He's an out-and-out footballer. Like you said, he started his career at the back for Melbourne. He came in to replace the great Billy Slater when Billy was out with his shoulder issues and everyone was like, oh, well, no one's going to replace Billy. And then Munster just comes in. And no one had really heard too much about this Munster guy when he first came in. But it was, you know, quickly found out that we had a player in our competition. And what Chamo just said, he's absolutely correct. Like, he's one of those players, you know, he's out of form. If he's not playing, well, when he's not that he's ever out of form, but he might have a few quiet games. You put him in that Origin jersey and you just know he's going to deliver. That transferred to the Australian jersey every time he got an opportunity. And it's going to be a massive occasion down there. They're always hard to play, Melbourne, particularly in a milestone game. It's an area that Craig Bellamy has put an emphasis on for as long as I can remember. You need to honour the milestones that your teammates play in. We went down there one year for Cam from his 400th, which was
wow.
That was an experience. But yeah, he's a tremendous player. He certainly had a few ups and downs off the field, but he's really matured in these last few years. He's got a young family now, and geez, I'd like to be in a position to knock back $6 million.
Yeah, well, it was couple of million over what he eventually accepted from the Storm because, as he said, you know, I want to win premierships. And, you know, I guess that is a key thing, isn't it? Rather than just the cash.
Well, I'm pretty sure he got paid pretty well either way.
Yes,
yeah, I don't think he's busking in the streets of Melbourne, no. But if someone hadn't watched Cameron Munster or told you to explain, give me a story that sums up Cameron Munster. Is there a better story than the one who leads his team to a premiership, goes on Mad Monday, and then returns to Queensland camp 4 days later when Origin was at the end of the year.
He turned up late as well.
He turned up late. Oh, he was blind and then had a blinder for Queensland as well. Like that's Cameron Munster to a T.
That's right. It was a throwback to old times because he had the husky voice after the game. Remember, he's doing the interview. He's like, yeah, thanks, guys. Like,
is he chirpy on the field?
No, he's not overly chirpy. He bounces around. He's so hard to tackle, and if you stand next to him, there's not much of him, but I remember when we ever used to do our video sessions, particularly he plays on the left edge, I'd talk to Britt, our right edge back row, and say, mate, don't try and tackle him like you're tackling a halfback, you'll try and tackle him like you're tackling a back rower, because he's that strong through his hips. Still to this day, you see him stand in tackles, hold people off, find an offload. Like, he's tremendously strong for his size, and he's a competitor. Multiple positions, fullback, 5'8", could probably play centre, wing, wherever you wanted to put him. Kicks a ball like he goes to the AFL training grounds quite regularly, and yeah, it's a huge milestone for him, and congratulations to Cam on his 200th.
Where do you think he will sit at the end of his career in the Melbourne Storm pecking order of greatest players? Does he sit behind the other three?
Oh, I think he does at this stage. Like, they played in 5 or 6 grand finals, won multiple. Like, yeah. Cam's played in 3, has he? He's won 1. So he's definitely getting up there, but you're talking about Cooper, who's played 250 games, grand finals. Billy, multiple grand finals, over 250 games. Cam, 400 games. Probably GI is still there. He's sitting in that next
top 5
echelon,
maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Christian Welch, I think, also has 150th, and maybe he would have played 202. He's had rotten luck with
horrendous
injuries as well. And he's had an interesting season. I heard him talking during the week and how it was kind of a hit on his ego. He lost the captaincy. He was playing off the bench a lot, but then he realised, I love this joint. I just want to play whatever my role is to the best of my ability.
Yeah, well, that comes as you get older. Like, you want to be the player you were through the when you're prime. I'm not saying he's past his prime, but like, just in that period, you always think you're going to be that player. And when you lose a starting spot, it happened to me. Teague Wilton started in the back end of my career when I was in the back row. And you want to say it doesn't hurt the ego a little bit, but it does. But then you're right. Like, he's been in that club for so long. I'd been at the Sharks for so long. And it's just, you love the place. You want to see the place do well. You want to see your teammates do well. And when you get to that stage in your career, all that matters and all that becomes important is team success and club success. And I had some of my, prouder moments in my career looking at the young guys come through and kick the goals. Cause I remember sitting there watching them playing under 20s or even Harold Matz, SG Ball come through and they finally make the big stage. And then they're in their rookie seasons, they're learning the ropes. And next year, 2 years after, 3 years after, now they're starting to be out there being elite players and owning the field. And you sort of, it comes in different stages of life too. I was a father then, so you have that sort of understanding of different stages of your life. And no doubt Christian's the same in his position. Like, you start admiring everything about the club and being happy. Other things bring you more happiness and personal achievement, and it sounds like that's where he's at.
All right, look, I just wanted to drag your attention to a little local derby that's on. That's the Dragons and the Sharkies. Now, the Sharkies are sitting pretty on top of the table, playing terrific round of footy. The Dragons are coming off a 60-18 demolition from the Roosters on Anzac Day. What I found very interesting was Supercoach Shane Flanagan deciding that was the time to just put a little dig into the Sharks, saying, of course, that they hadn't won a premiership since he was in charge. Is that the right timing to do that?
Oh, you gotta love it. It's like, it's a bit of a tactic of a ploy. Like, honestly, there'd be a part of him, Flano, the competitor who he is. He's really looking forward to this game. There's no doubt. But when he said, I've had it circled in my calendar for a long time, maybe he should have had the Anzac Day game circled in his calendar because his team just got beat by 60. So it wasn't a good, maybe not the best opportunity to bring that out, but. Look, it did the right thing. Everyone's talking about his comments and the upcoming derby with the Sharks, and they're great games to be a part of. Some of my most remembered and favourite games in Cronulla jersey was up against the Dragons, and it is the typical big brother versus little brother. We've had the wood over him for quite a while now, but it's one of those games where you just know form goes out the window. It's about whatever team turns up and can, get it done on that day. And what makes it special is how much it means to the community. Like, bar winning the premiership, if you win a premiership, ultimately you have bragging rights over every team. But if you can't win the premiership, all our fans in the Shire, all they want is for us to beat the Dragons, and you can feel it amongst the community. And at PointsBet Stadium tomorrow, it's sold out. And don't worry, even if it rains, they'll be packed out the rafters.
I think it means more to Cronulla fans than it does Dragons fans. Like, the Dragons are so spread out with their supporter base. A lot of it in Wollongong now, and the Dragons fan base in general is probably one of the biggest supporter bases, and it's all over. But the Sharks, they're such a passionate parochial group of fans, and you'd imagine it means so much to them over there. I was just interested, like, Flano referenced that premiership. Is that the soft premiership that you guys won that Gus referred to all those years ago?
Gus. Well, mate, if there's anything of a soft premiership, I'll just take whatever premiership I would get, mate, all right?
Yeah, I talked to Gus about it earlier,
we
actually.
We have to beat a Cameron Munster team, Cam Smith team.
Soft premiership? Yeah. What do you think he meant by that?
Cooper Cronk.
Was he just trying to bait Gal, maybe?
Maybe.
I can tell you what he meant by that. This is what he meant by that.
What stupid game is this?
That's exactly what he meant. But the Dragons, Ryan Girdler, when you get flogged as they were on Anzac Day, and that was a big occasion, huge occasion, and they now turn to this local derby. And we've seen the Raiders come back from a 40-0 drubbing and get a win last night. How tough is it, and can the Dragons turn that around?
Oh, they certainly can, Tony, and with that extra motivation you spoke about, I just thought Flano was taking a little bit of pressure off that result as well, and the headline was always then going to be about next week and not the week that's been. And we saw last night, like, the Roosters went up and put 40 past the Broncos at Suncorp. So we know what sort of side they can be when, you know, things fall their way and they're in that sort of form. And also, you know, we spoke earlier in the show about momentum and how hard it is to swing that once a side gets it. And that's exactly what happens. And we're seeing a lot of blowout scores after, you know, it was a pretty tight start to the season. Now we're starting to see, like, every week now there's two or three, like, blowouts. And so I don't think you can really read into the fact that they got beat by a better side, but I don't think you can really read into the scoreline of what happened at Anzac Day. And they'll be motivated. They've got some players that are in good form. That's their season at the moment too, isn't it? The Dragons, you feel like with, you know, the new coach and some new key personnel in key positions that they're on a journey, a little bit like the Bulldogs, you know, it's going to be different every week. You're going to have your good weeks. You're going to have your bad weeks. You're going to have a lot of players in there learning. Especially, you know, trying to understand the expectations of what a coach like Shane Flanagan brings to a team. So I think I definitely think they'll be up for the task tomorrow, Tone. I'm not sure if they're going to beat the Sharks over there at PointsBet with the brand of footy the Sharks are playing, especially with the attack that they have. But I think it's also a really good test for the Sharks, this one, to make sure that they maintain that sort of level of performance. And you know, the Dragons aren't there yet, but they're going to come up in the next month against some pretty good footy sides. And I think everyone's waiting to see how they respond to those challenges, because their run so far, you know, you can only beat who they put in front of you, but it has been a little bit light on. And they are going to meet some more difficult teams in the next month or so. And this is really the start of it. It's a big game. There's lots of emotion around it, and both sides will be up for it, no doubt.
Believe it or not, I haven't actually read any of the questions today because I've been too busy just trying to sell Michael Chambers' interchange bench idea. Going very, very well.
I might even come in with a believe it or not of my own later.
Will you?
Yeah.
In the segment?
I might have my own. Yeah, why not?
Okay.
Do you want me to start with it?
Yeah, okay.
It's not rugby league related, but I've got a believe it or not. Right. I just a little bit. Yesterday was my wife's birthday, right?
Okay.
And I play soccer on Friday nights.
Mm-hmm.
I went to her halfway through the day because I was a bit scared about asking. And I said, can I play soccer tonight? And the response was, do what you like. Now, in the end, do what you like, I took that as code. And she's the one that says, oh, I don't care about my birthday. I don't want presents. But I made the decision not to play last night. And I really regretted it. Did I make the right decision? Believe it or not, I made the right decision not to play.
I believe you made the right decision.
You reckon?
Yes.
No, Chama, I reckon you got to take that there's going to be a little bit of pain.
Yeah.
There's going to be some grief.
She would have got over it.
She would have got over it, mate. They move on quickly.
No. Did you actually get a present?
We went out for lunch.
That's not a gift.
And I took her for massage.
This is where you went.
I didn't give them that.
This is where you went wrong. Because you asked and then she gave you the no. You couldn't go, but if you just didn't ask and just went,
it's better to come back.
She didn't give him the no.
It's better to come back and
she didn't give me the no.
Yeah,
she didn't give me the no.
Do what you like. Like, it's my decision.
Chamo, you got to get your calendar sorted, brother. It's Mother's Day next week. You could have said, I'm going to play soccer tonight.
Yeah.
But we're going to have the best, you know, combined birthday Mother's Day next week. It's going to be epic.
I work Sundays, girls. It doesn't really work for me. I'm going to miss that as well.
Oh, yeah, but she's not thinking about that.
Did your team win?
They won 5-0.
Oh,
maybe they're better without you.
Yeah, that's right. I'm like Latrell Mitchell. I'm trying to, you know, I gave up. I withdrew from the game to focus on other things, and unfortunately, I made the wrong call.
You might get your spot back. Where do you play, Chamo?
Goalkeeper.
What position are you?
Goalkeeper. Well, I played rugby league for 23 years, and I needed to continue something.
You must be the smallest goalkeeper in the division.
Well, I just qualify for over 35s now. I'm 6 months into that, so they're not the fastest guys.
I see you're the youngest man in the team.
Youngest man in the team.
All right.
Well, I was in the team. I don't know if I'm in it next week anymore.
But you're still married. That's the important thing.
How many clean sheets you kept this year?
We had the best defence in the comp, mate. 2 goals conceded in 4 games. So.
Wow. Okay.
All right.
Well, anyway, I'll
that's
ruin
it
that
for Believe
segment.
It or Not. Thank you very much. Believe it or not, Thursday night footy should never be played at a core stadium. That did look poor, didn't it? It was bad weather as well.
There were more people at my soccer game. I don't believe it. Sometimes you just can't. You can't schedule a competition based on empty seats in a crowd. I don't like a core stadium. I don't. But I don't know. The NRL start dictating what they do with the schedule.
Yeah, I'm the same as Shavar. I don't believe you got to play where you got to play. And I think we spent so much time on the first one, so let's just make this one quick and so we can get through the rest of the questions.
Are you running the show now?
I believe it. I don't think any game should be played at ACCO other than grand finals and Origins.
Yeah, I think that's a good call, actually. All right, believe it or not, the Sharks are genuine premiership contenders, Ryan Girdler.
I don't believe.
Come on, Gerd, give us a shot, mate.
I don't believe it at this point. I'll be watching the next month of footy really closely. I'm really impressed with what they've done. Just need to see a couple of big scalps under their belt, and then yeah, certainly happy to say it then. But just at this point, I think they're just a notch under, the Panthers and some of those other teams.
Well, I believe it. I believe we can win it every year, mate, as a Sharkies fan, but. Gers is right. We've got a really good opportunity over probably the next 5-6 weeks where we come up against those really big teams like the Penrith, the Broncos, the Roosters, I think, are sandwiched in there, maybe Melbourne as well. So there's a great opportunity in front of the team that's coming out. Obviously, the derby first thing first tomorrow, but then we can look forward and there's a real test for the team.
You call it opportunity. I think it's reality, Wade, to be honest with you, the next 4 weeks for the Sharks, because I don't know what happens with Cronulla, but they get a pretty soft draw they have over the last few years. And the draw to start the year, I hope Fitzy's not listening, but they've played the Warriors, Bulldogs, Tigers, Raiders, Rabbits, Cowboys, Raiders, Dragons. It hasn't been a hard run. They should be where they are, given the talent they have. But I think the next 4 weeks after that, that'll bring them crashing back down to reality, unfortunately. But the advantage, though, they do have is a lot of those hard games are during an Origin period. I think they play Penrith in the week leading into Origin 1, maybe the Parramatta as well after that, Broncos. So they actually, the draws worked out really well for them. So no, I don't believe it.
All right, and finally, this is kind of a flip of that, I guess. Believe it or not, the Warriors are pretenders in 2024. That's cruel that I read it out loud. It's
yeah,
very
that sounds
cruel,
harsh,
doesn't it?
I don't believe it. I think they're not playing, they're not where they want to be, and they're not playing the footy that they certainly can play. But I think if they can get their act together and get into the top four, It's such a daunting place to go and play regardless over there. But if you need to go over there for a prelim or a grand final qualifier, if the Warriors can somehow jag some wins and get themselves in that spot, like, they're a big opportunity. But there's a lot of improvement they need to find, because I watched that game against South where they completely dismantled them. And yes, it was South who aren't playing well, but the way they played it, the style of footy, that's the style that holds up in big games, and they never went away from it. They were relentless with the game plan and how they executed it that day. They just need to get back to that. And if they can find any vein of that and then be in good shape at the back end of the year, they'll be trouble for some teams.
Good.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that they're pretenders, but exactly the same as Wade. You know, a fair way from where they were, I think, this time last year. The foundations, I believe, haven't probably been laid the way that they should have been in the off-season. I'm not sure whether it's fixable. I'm not sure whether they've got the time to fix that going into the back end of the season. I know that the Origin period's always a good time for the Warriors to pick up a couple of wins that they might have dropped. So, you know, the opportunity's there for them. I just don't know whether the work's been done and whether the foundations have been laid for their season for them to be competing in the big games at the end of the year.
Yeah, I think their best contends, their worst is a pretends, really. That's as far as I'll take it.
There's your Believe It or Not for this week. This is the Saturday Scrum.
Triple M Footy lives on Listener, thanks to McDonald's and Ream Hot Water.